Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 7 of Year Long Conversation. Today's main theme is going to be all about the drug war. We're going to be asking, is the drug war really a race war? Kind of getting into the different candidates, their policies on drugs, and really the drug war throughout history, how that may have always been used to keep minorities down. How's it going, Michael?
Going great. I would like to dedicate this podcast to the loving memory of one Rand Paul.
Yeah, we don't normally get a chance to do dedications, but I mean, if ever there was one, because it kind of came about that way, that not this debate the Republicans had Saturday, but the one they had before that, the one Donald Trump skipped, he was really the only one that gave a remotely good answer on the drug war. And so we thought, well, he's dropped out of the race, and New Hampshire has a huge heroin problem, apparently, and what better thing to talk about not before New Hampshire primary. But first, let's talk more in general about what do you think is behind this daily debate that they're having. Last week, we saw the Democrat, they had a town hall, and then right after it, a debate. I don't think anybody knew about it.
No, they didn't. And I looked on when I got home, I turned on the TV guide to see if I could find it, and it wasn't even listed on the programming. It's just that the Rachel Maddow show was supposed to be on, and I got really confused. But I just decided to flip it over there anyways, and there it was.
Rachel Maddow,
yeah.
Moderators, and what if it showed her, and she's like, there's a debate tonight? Shit, I guess I'll be asking questions. But basically, I think what happened was Hillary had been wanting to have this debate for weeks, and Bernie was stalling. And he didn't want to have it unless she agreed to have other debate. He wanted this debate in exchange for another debate in New York right before the New York primary in Brooklyn, his hometown. And I wonder why Hillary might not have wanted that. But basically, he went to the debate last night because she agreed to 4 new debates that most of them are in April. And then there's one in May, which is crazy because the convention is, by the time they have the last one in May, 42 states have voted, 41, 42, something like that. I mean, the race is over. You got to wonder, who's doing Hillary's negotiating? Because it fucking sucks. You know, who's on her side? Who says, well, this guy that we're probably going to wipe out on Super Tuesday, let's agree to have 4 more debates with him throughout April and May, so we drag this out forever. Who would agree to that?
I think it's somebody. Well, before I answer that, if you watch the debate, about halfway through, Bernie just looking exhausted. You know, he was stuttering. He looks like he's getting tired. So maybe whoever it was that made the decision was like, yeah, if we just keep hammering out these debates one after the other, he's just going to drop dead, and then we don't have to worry about it.
He starts strong in the first 10 minutes, but then by the end of the second hour, he slumped over the podium. You know, he's barely standing up. His face is red. And when you watch him with the hand movements and the yelling and making pretty much the same point about break up the banks 100 times. I mean, it's pretty exhausting to watch him, so I could see why he gets tired. But they asked him during the Anderson Cooper Town Hall, they asked him 3 good questions. How are you going to get what you want past Congress? How are you going to pay for it? And are you going to live to the end of your first term? How are you going to survive to be president? He's 74 years old right now. He'd be the oldest first-term president.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you look at Obama, when he took office, he looked like Will Smith. Now he looks like Morgan Freeman. Obama, he conversation the other day, he was shaking. He was you can just tell that he wants to grab a cigarette, finally. So I don't know the stress of the job. But Bernie can't handle a single debate where he has to stand up because the town hall, so they never really faced each other. The first half, it was him and he sat down most of the time. The second half, Hillary came out. But during the actual debate, I see why Hillary wanted that format, because they both had to stand up, do it for 2 hours and talk for 2 hours.
Yeah.
And every time they've done that format, he does look terrible. I mean, he doesn't seem like he's got that kind of stamina. It seems like the stress the job killing him after about 4 weeks.
Yeah, it probably will.
But so Wednesday night, they had a town hall on CNN. Thursday night, they had real debate on MSNBC. Friday night, they had awkward cocktails on Bravo. And then Saturday, the Republican debate.
The highlight of my night.
I know, it felt good to be against the Republicans again. We've been arguing with Bernie Sanders fans so much, and I thought, if only we could get Bernie on that stage so he can go against him for once instead of another Democrat. But yeah, the GOP debate, it felt almost nostalgic because they hadn't had one. They've had one, but it felt like a long time. It's only been about a week, but it felt like a lot longer than that. But it felt nostalgic because it's oh, we get to show them the Republicans again. We're not just, because for about a week, the battle between Hillary and Bernie, that took center stage. I mean, for about a week, it was Hillary versus Bernie. So it was almost like the Republicans saw them fight. They're like, hey, damn it, you're not going to steal our bit. We hate each other, not you guys. And so they had to get back into it with a debate. And I don't know. Do you think that debate Saturday, you think it'll change New Hampshire's results at all? I mean, will it have any real impact?
I don't know. I think it could. I think Marco Rubio gets absolutely annihilated by Chris Christie. I mean, he was complete, I've never seen a candidate so rattled in my life. Well, let me take that back. There was one other time that was even more awkward. But yeah, Rubio was just absolutely, he didn't know what to do at times. And Christy.
Yeah, Rubio was thinking, damn, I shouldn't have left my Coke at home today.
Yeah.
He did that in the boost. I mean, he's been sniffing lines the whole time he's been in these debates. And I mean, yeah.
Yeah, and Christy just one time after another just went pounding on him. And it was hilarious to watch.
It was pretty great. And we've been waiting for the fat bully to emerge this whole primary season. And it finally did. I mean, I guess he figured,
yeah,
hey, fuck it, New Hampshire or bust. Mm-hmm. I might as well if I'm never going to. And yeah, when he was beating up on Rubio, I mean, I hadn't seen him beating that lopsided to Trotney King. He was really going after him with a hammer. And Rubio, it was amazing because Christie pointed out, he said, you've said the same thing about Barack Obama twice. Now, what the hell are you going to talk about yourself? And then Rubio did it a third time. I mean, the audience was booming.
Literally the
and he
same
was
line.
He said the same damn line a third time, and the audience was booing him. And then, about an hour later, he went back to he said it a fourth time, like an hour later, he went back to this whole, Barack Obama knows exactly what he's doing. He's trying to undermine Rick, and it's like, did you not hear the boos the second and third time? More time, and see how it goes.
Yeah, and I love that Christy was calling him out. That's your 25-second stump speech that you're going to go to, because that's what your controllers are telling you to do. And Marco Rubio is being controlled. Like, there's no question about it. He's sticking to that script, and he's not deviating at all. And when Christy starts attacking him, he doesn't know what to do. So you kind of see why they keep him on script.
Yeah, I feel like pretty much what you'd normally be called the establishment, Democrats and Republicans, they're kind of getting sick of this shit. I mean, you've seen Christy and you've seen Hillary, and they're kind of like, you know what, call me a rhino, you've called me a dino, you've called me all this shit, and I'm like, they're kind of fighting back against the, you know, the ideologically pure of the party. People think Rubio's establishment, but I think that's only because the establishment is more afraid of Ted Cruz and Donald Trump. Like,
right.
I think that if the establishment could pick Jeb Bush or Christy, they would over Rubio.
Yeah.
But he's really more just totally bought and paid for by the billionaire wing of the party and not so much the party itself. And it's people kind of think they're the same thing. They're a little bit different. They agree about 90% of the time, but there's a little bit of a difference.
Yeah.
I think Christy, he's probably just fed up with this shit. We've seen this race get very meta. Have you noticed that? Like, it's gotten very, like, inside baseball.
Yeah.
During the same debate when they were booing Trump over his comments about Jeb, he goes, oh, and by the way, these are all paid lobbyists for Bush in the crowd.
Yeah.
He goes, these are party insiders. I wanted my people to get tickets. They said, we don't have enough tickets because we have to give lobbyists and influential people inside the party tickets to the debate. And of course, they didn't dare pan out to the crowd because you would have seen a lot of, like, lobbyists wearing flannel trying to look like New Hampshire people.
Yeah.
They would have had a heroin needle in their arm, and they would have tried to fit in. And he's absolutely right when he said that. That's not just him saying that. And when Christie was going after Rubio and his 30 seconds canned speech, he was right. And when Hillary was going after Bernie and his somewhat naive policies and how he hasn't actually like really put forth a comprehensive bill of how to break up the banks, he just says that this race is getting kind of meta. It's kind of getting into, we've heard enough rhetoric, and now we want to get into, like, how politics is really played and how that's really done. And when Hillary, I mean, she kind of got on Bernie for saying he's going to be so popular that a groundswell of support is going to push Democrats into office and take over Congress. But she pointed out that he hasn't raised any money for Democrats. She raised $5 million and $15 million for herself, $5 million for her in January. He raised $20 million for himself and zero for Democrats in January. And most of his fans think Democrats are sellouts. So it was kind of one of those things where it's like, how can you say you will help the party take back Congress when you say the party's sellouts and that's why they're supporting me? People are now like, all right, it's time to get serious about this. It's time to cut out the rhetoric. Donald Trump nailed Ted Cruz for those shady voicemails about the Carson campaign. Ben Carson, he was mad for like 5 seconds about when he came out there and said, I'm tired of people. Yeah, but Ben Carson is kind of a bitch. You know, like, he's sort of whiny. He's kind of a whiny. It's kind of hard to know who plays the victim more, him or Ted Cruz. But
yeah.
Carson, he could have really nailed Ted Cruz about this, but he just decided to moan about it a little bit and then keep saying, I didn't really get the answer about North Korea, because why would we ask you about North Korea? You know, I really like you.
He's got a lot to say about North Korea.
Yeah, and then they asked him about it, and he didn't really. He's like, well, when I played missiles as a kid, I knew a lot of
things. I'm surprised he didn't go into, I once shot a missile at a person, but his belt
stopped. I'd pretend he would have a duty Kim Jong-un. I'd pretend he was that kid I used to shoot bottle rockets at. He probably has some outlandish thing.
Although Ben Carson did provide what I feel is the most awkward moment I've ever seen on a debate stage. And it was during their introduction, if you call it.
Yeah.
They call his name and he's sitting there in that little semi-tunnel. He's just standing there and the candidates are coming out behind him.
Yeah, like, Like, at first I thought he was, like, protesting or something. Like, I didn't know what he was doing. Like, I thought he was trying to make a point. And then when he got out there and didn't say a word about it, I thought, is he, like, Forrest Gump or somebody? Did he just not know that they were screaming his name over the loudspeaker? But he can't. Yeah, you're right. Like, he just stood there. I mean, that was intentional, right? Because I couldn't really tell. It looked intentional at first.
I don't know. Donald Trump stops right beside him. And they're both just kind of awkwardly standing there. And, like, Rubio walks out and just walks past him. And Jeb Bush kind of walks out and gives him his goofy stare, like, well, you know, what are you guys doing?
I expected Trump to trip Jeb Bush. Like, and, yeah, but, I mean, I think Trump knew what he was doing because he's like, yeah, I'm not going to let Ben Carson do something crazy and I'm not going to do it. I mean, it's the media. I want the media to be on me at all times. So, I mean, I think he knew what he was doing. But, Ben, I can't eat. That's the most ambiguous. I don't know if it was, like, he literally was just daydreaming about fucking cartoons or something. Like, he just had, like, a thought bubble over his head that showed Pokemon and he was playing with them as a kid or something. I don't know if he was just literally lost in thought and forgot he was about to go to fucking national debate stage for president. But
he
can't think
and walk.
He's like, let me spit out this gum before I have to walk across the stage. I can't do both. He's like trying to swallow his gum and almost chokes before he walks up there. I mean, I don't know if it was on purpose or if he just, like, legit, if he was trying to prove a point, but then when they asked, when they were talking to him, that would have been a good time to tell us what that point was instead of not addressing it at all. To me, of when 9/11 happened and Bush sat there for 9 straight minutes and didn't do anything, and I mean, he just went out to lunch about his decision making. If you needed more reasons to think Ben Carson would not be a very decisive commander in chief, I mean, if you needed one more, that may have been it.
Seriously, that pretty much summarized Ben Carson's campaign. that one moment summarized the awkwardness and just weirdness of Ben Carson.
Just to recap really quick, because it's not really that important anymore, but just to recap the voicemail scandal, what happened was in Iowa, Ted Cruz's staffers, they sent out voicemails and different things saying that Ben Carson had suspended his campaign right before the Iowa caucus, and they think that maybe some of Ben Carson's supporters, they thought he had dropped out and they supported Ted.
Right.
That probably didn't have that big of an impact, but if it was 1,000 votes, because Iowa's not a winner-take-all, you get delegates. The reason they were able to do that is because Ben had put out a statement saying he was going home for a fresh set of clothes and to sleep in his own bed. They go, Ben, are you going to New Hampshire or South Carolina after Iowa? I'm going to Florida. And he went back to Florida for a fresh set of clothes. I thought, God, this is, I'm pretty sure they have laundromats in Iowa.
I don't know, though. It is Iowa.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, Ben Carson is this the strangest candidate you've ever seen run for president.
Absolutely.
If he's not the strangest, he'd be the strangest one who's done pretty well.
Yeah.
Because he came in fourth in Iowa.
And he was actually ahead in Iowa, too, for a little bit.
Yeah, back in November, he was ahead in Iowa and nationally.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why some of the polls, like some of the Super Tuesday states, they haven't done, like, any fresh polling since back in November. So when you look at their polls and who's ahead, it's still Ben Carson. Because, like, 4 months ago, they did their last polls or whatever. So it's still him. And he might be thinking, I'm going to win. You know, it's like, I mean, all these polls are really old. And he's committed 100 missteps since then. Oh, and of course, I like the part where they were talking about abortion. And it was 7 men talking about how they would ban abortion. And, of course, they banned the only woman. And the really only Fiorina was out there. She was at a Red Lobster or something. I don't know. She right before the debate, she sent an email, kind of like a petulant email, but I'm going on a date night with my husband. And it's like, yeah, okay. I mean, she was at an Applebee's or whatever while they were all at the debate stage, and they're talking about banning abortion. I'm like, well, they already kicked out the only woman on the debate, so why not ban abortion? I mean, what if they were like, all right, now that we've got rid of Fiorina, the He-Man Woman Haters Club can begin properly? You know, we'll have plenty of time to get into abortion. But in the last week, we've talked about it, but Rand Paul and Mike Huckabee and Rick Santorum, they dropped out. But it's kind of hilarious that the Republicans had a quarter of their field drop out and they still got 9 people running for president.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty unprecedented. It's after Iowa, about to be New Hampshire, and they've still got 9 people in there.
Uh-huh. And that tells you the state that the Republican Party's in. It's literally a civil war. It's a civil war.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's not just two sides anymore. It used to be the establishment versus the Tea Party. Now you've got the Tea Party who's become establishment, the establishment that's become Tea Party, the traditional Republicans, the libertarians, and then whatever the hell Jim Gilmore is.
Yeah.
So you've got, like, I mean, Jim Gilmore during the debate, he was at the debate. He was debating the homeless guy in the parking lot, you know. I think he might have won that one. Either that or What if Jesse Ventura is like, you pussy arm wrestle me at this truck stop down the road? And Jimmy was like, you're on. It would just start a pretty funny, you know, hashtag of like, where's Jim Gilmore? And it just show him doing outrageous things. I mean, he got 12 people in Iowa, 12 people, and he's still in the race. And so, I don't know. I think we'll have another podcast about are these elections a big business, because we've had debate fatigue. We've still got 9 people in there. And Marco Rubio, during the debate, he said, well, we've been willing to have twice as many debates as the Democrats. It's like, yeah, because you started out with 17 people. They had 5.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm getting debate fatigue from all of these debates. It's getting ridiculous.
Well, now the Democrats have 2. Republicans still have 9 people. They have to cut people loose because there's so many people that they can't put them all on stage. And Bernie Sanders just got Hillary to agree to 4 new debates. I mean, is there a position these guys have that we don't know about yet? Because I'm skeptical.
No, not at all. And that's the thing. Every one of these debates, I mean, kind of like we talked about when we were our first couple of podcasts, when we basically predicted exactly what was going to happen in that debate. You can go back and listen to that debate before you watch tonight's debate, and it's still going to be essentially the same thing. These candidates stick to their stump speech. They don't move. They don't pivot away from it, except for Donald Trump. Chris Christie said, you know, I'm going, you know, all in, and I'm just going to attack, you know, Rubio and see what happens. But other than those two, I mean, it's strictly by the book, by what they've polled, that's what they're sticking with. And they're not going to deviate from it, regardless of the question.
Nobody ever calls them out on, like Ted Cruz will say, Donald Trump, he's got a bad temper. He'll get us in a nuclear war, and then right after that, we got to blow up Iran and North Korea, people. We just can't let her.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, he's advocating wars with Iran, North Korea, and Russia at the same time accusing Trump to be a trigger-happy madman.
Right.
You got Trump being like, Mexican workers are bad, and then Bernie Sanders being like, Mexican trade is bad, and one's a racist, one's a progressive argument. And the progressive wing of the Democrat Party, they've been co-opted by the same anti-globalism stance that a lot of the conservatives have been.
Yeah.
And I keep watching these debates, and they're making these bullshit promises. I don't want a president to pretend that they can do anything about globalization. I want them to use it to America's advantage, figure out a way that we can be ahead of the curve on it and use it to our advantage and grow our own economy through that. I don't want them to pretend that they're going to be able to rip up trade deals or stop offshoring from happening, maybe the jobs that have been gone. Instead of lying to people and being like, we can bring manufacturing back, we can do all this stuff for manufacturing, they should say, we're going to bring better, higher tech, more educated manufacturing, because that is a sector that we could grow in and compete. No, we're not going to be able to make socks as cheap as Mexico can, but we can make solar panels as well as any country in the world and make those good jobs. But every time somebody says, well, those jobs, John McCain said it in the 2008 primary. He said, well, the jobs that have gone from Michigan, they're not coming back. Mitt Romney came in and said, they're coming back. I can get them back. And the state went to Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
When Donald Trump gives a detailed answer about tariffs and how to get around China and how to compete in the global economy, there's silence when somebody else says, I'm going to bring these jobs back and I'm going to get you those sock mill jobs back. People clap. And people talking about these trade agreements, they're going to rip them up and then people can't offshore jobs. Those trade agreements, they're not permission. Like corporations, they don't need permission to offshore jobs. They can do it with or without trade agreements.
And the thing is, like, the more that Republicans sit and Democrats, well, I won't say Democrats, but Bernie Sanders, the more that you have Republicans and Bernie Sanders attacking these trade deals and threatening to rip them up and threatening to raise taxes. In Bernie's case, threatening to raise taxes on wealthier people, and, you know, you're going to have to raise revenue. And these companies are going to say, you know, screw America, I'm going to go overseas regardless.
And there's nothing the government can do to stop a company from doing that. Mm-hmm. I mean, right now there are policies that maybe encourage that through different tariff and tax loopholes, and those policies should be gotten rid of. But if you really hammer a company, they're going to leave.
Yeah.
Kind of to get into trade is also to maybe into a little bit of drugs and the main theme, because Donald Trump says he can build a wall and he's going to stop the drug trade that way. And, of course, drugs come on trucks. They cross the border from Mexico to America. I mean, there's 10,000 trucks a day that pass to the 3 main bridges, Tijuana to San Diego, Laredo to New Laredo, Juarez to San Antonio. So there's all this traffic and trade, and they come on trucks, usually with a government seal on them. So I don't know that people are really out there with a pack mule anymore, like, you know, carrying drugs across the border on the back of a donkey. But I don't know that that really can be stopped. But I think when we get into the drug war, and these policies, what can be done? Because Rand Paul, last debate before Iowa, he was the only candidate who had a remotely good answer for the drug war and how what a failure it is and how it needs to stop and how it's just locking millions of black males up and creating this huge, like, racial discrimination in the justice system. And he said that, dropped a real truth bomb out there, probably the best answer I've seen out of any of the candidates on the Republican side so far. And the second he said that, the Fox News moderators were like, oh, we've got to go to a commercial break. They didn't say a word, and they went to a commercial break as fast as they could. And when they came back from commercial break, it was less about white policing entitlements and more about, like, Social Security entitlement, welfare entitlement, which is their comfort zone. And during this last debate, when they were asking, because they had a whole section about drugs, and I have to say, I really missed Rand Paul. Like, I mean, if it's possible to miss him, I mean, he was probably watching that debate somewhere, like, throwing his shoe at the television because he wanted to miss something so bad. But this is the only issue that he's really good on. It's one of the few issues that he's good on. It's really his best issue is drugs and incarceration and police discrimination, stuff like that. And in some ways, he's better about it than Hillary or Bernie are.
Yeah.
He talks about it a lot more and a lot more frequently. But in this debate, they asked the candidates who were there, they said, what would you do to combat America's drug problem and racist policing and stuff like that? And Trump, they basically asked him, who's the most discriminated minority? And he said, the police. Police are the most discriminated minority.
Right.
These are not guys who are really getting it.
Yeah, that's, my God, I don't even know how to respond. Like, how can you say that? If you just look at the past year, killing of just innocent people, really? The police? Come on.
And then they got into an elaborate thing with Ted Cruz where he told a personal story about his sister who was addicted to drugs. And this whole thing, it would have been touching if you didn't feel like Ted's staff had been over him with it. And like, this is how you're going to humanize yourself. And you'd almost suspected Christie or Trump wanted to say something like, oh, this is where Ted pretends he's a human being, you know? But they knew better than that because it would be used against them. But I mean, if the race were really meta, they would have called him out on it. Ted Cruz, he told a story about his sister who was long addicted to drugs and his nephew had to put up with that and with his mom, and then eventually his sister died of a drug overdose. Then he turns right around and basically says that jail over rehab works. Like, he was asking people to feel sorry for him because of his own family background, but when it came to, like, the millions of people every year who were locked up for drug crimes, he has no sympathy for them.
Yeah.
I mean, and it was kind of staggering to hear him be like, my sister died of a drug overdose. That's why we need to make marijuana illegal again. It was just basically, we need to throw more people in jail instead of rehab. I mean, it was kind of like, you just talked about a real problem in your own family, and you have a solution that shows no compassion for anybody who went through what your family went through, which was kind of staggering.
And I think that was, of the candidates that actually talked about it, it was, I believe it was either Kasich or Bush, that talked about, I believe it was Bush, that talked about in their state, they had automatic, if you were arrested for drug charges, you automatically went into a rehab. And talked about the success of that over just locking up drug offenders. Some people do talk about it, but not as passionately or as real as what Rand Paul would talk about it. I mean, it was something that he legitimately cared about. It's not something that, oh,
sure,
well, I have to have an answer for this for when it comes up, so what do I need to say? It was something that Rand was passionate about, and you could feel that passion, and I think that's one reason that he was constantly on it, and it's something that a lot of the other candidates aren't really comfortable talking about.
You got that right, because I'm telling you, when he mentioned that at the last debate, as I said, the best answer I've ever heard at one of these debates on the Republican side so far, crickets, not one clap.
Yeah.
And when he got done, I mean, he almost felt Ted Cruz want to leave the stage, and Chris Christie was squirming away from it. I mean, like, they looked visibly uncomfortable when he was talking about this, because it was a real issue, and I mean, Rand, he can't really say that this is just politics because he is in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
His Senate seat, and I don't think it really positively affects him. And, I mean, the Republican Party, their base is, what, 0.0005% black? So, I mean, this is not really something that's like politics necessarily for him. I mean, people back him up on this that really are not Republicans and really probably wouldn't vote for him for president. I mean, it's not really just politics, this issue. Because this is things not just about the drug war, but is it really a race war? Because this has been going on a long time. Trump, he associates Mexican immigrants with drugs. And yes, there are Mexican drug cartels. I mean, we know Los Zetas and Sinaloa cartel, they do exist. But I mean, that's a few thousand people in a country of millions.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who are the hardest on that kind of thing, like Bernie and Trump and all this, it's really because Mexico has got staggering income inequality. and actually trade with them would probably help. And if some of these young males had any way to earn a living besides joining the cartel, it probably would. It's kind of incredible to say, we're going to cut off trade with Mexico and somehow stop the drug problem, but you'd probably just make it worse. And because there would be no other industries there, really, for people to, the income inequality we have is bad, but in there, it's way worse. I mean, a few oligarchs basically run the country, and that's why so many people have joined drug gangs. But yeah, so it was, I mean, so I think he associates Mexican immigrants with drugs, and a lot of people might associate black males with drug gangs in Baltimore and Chicago and pretty much any inner city that's majority black, and Birmingham, we could say, Mobile, Montgomery. And when you look at, like Rand Paul, he quoted a staff that said in Ferguson, Missouri, where they've had all this racial tension, there's 60 black men for every 100 black women, and a lot of that's due to incarceration, and how this has been going on for so long that black men in America, they make up the majority of the prison population. They're not a majority of America, they make up a majority of the prison population. This is not really new. Like, I think the drug war reappropriated it. I mentioned talking about the other day, not on the podcast, privately, the Southeast has kind of been doing this for a long time. I think the rest of the country just picked up on the black codes and the Jim Crow laws that the South had going for a long time, because after the Civil War, the Reconstruction period, kind of talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so after Reconstruction, during Reconstruction, after the Civil War, you had a ton of freed blacks in the South that didn't want to work in a cotton field anymore, and they were looking for jobs, and you had companies that were offering, you know, basically forced to offer them jobs, and they would end up being fired for whatever reason after not being successful or not signing a contract, or for whatever reason it may be. They would end up firing them and putting them out on the street, because it was still difficult to be black, uneducated, you know, unskilled, and try to get a job. I mean, it was still really hard, even with, you know, basically Union troops still in the South trying to oversee that you're being protected. But basically what you had was they would fire them, and a little bit after Reconstruction ends, they would arrest them. They would pass vagrancy laws where if you didn't have a house, if you were homeless, then you could be arrested. So they would fire them. They would be homeless, end up losing their house, they'd be homeless, they'd arrest them, put them in jail, and then you had the lend-lease system coming around where companies would basically pay out, you know, pay the prisons to rent out workers to come and work in their factories all day and pay the prison basically a quarter of what they would have to pay workers. So you would end up, finding a way to get cheaper labor, and the majority of that labor was black males,
like I've heard the stat before that right now there's more black men in jail than there were slaves in the South ever. And I think when you try to connect these two things and talk about how jails and incarceration, it's the new slavery, a lot of people roll their eyes, but really, when you look, I mean, you had slaves in the South, and then when the Civil War ended and they all got freed, like you were just saying, a lot of those same black people, they got put in prison to do the kind of work that they, and then they just rented out as chain gangs, so they went from being slaves to prisoners. And I look at that as the crucial middle step between slavery and what we've got now, to where it's kind of always been, incarceration is a different form of slavery, and it was one that the South needed to basically keep this free labor pool going, and they needed the free labor to keep going on. And now you've got, like in Alabama, where we, especially the part we come from, there were a lot of chicken plants. And the only people that they really could probably find to work those jobs were a lot of illegal Mexicans. But then when it became like they might be a little too expensive or whatever, when the prices started going up, the Alabama legislature passed a huge immigration bill. I feel like whether it comes to slavery or using black males in chain gangs, or right now, a lot of prisons, they contract labor out. A lot of call centers are going, India got too expensive. And they're like, oh, we can pay that Indian $4 an hour, or we can pay this American convict 50 cents an hour to do this job. So they started contracting out that. They started contracting out license plates. Whether it's taking advantage of illegal immigrant labor, pick all of our watermelons, and then when the season's over, we're going to pass the bill and tell you to leave, or slavery, incarceration, it's all kind of loosely connected.
Yeah, and I don't know if you happen to see the episode of Vice. There was a special that was actually shot in Alabama. It was in the episode, the episode was basically about the immigration law, and it was talking about some of the effects that the immigration law had, and how a lot of the Hispanic workers who were working, you know, in fields, picking watermelons and things like that, had left the state, and they were trying to find labor. And basically in Prattville, Alabama, it showed a clip of a farmer who basically went back to the prison system trying to get workers from the prison, and it was an utter failure. And if you watch the episode, guess how many white prisoners there were that were on the new chain gang? Zero.
Yeah.
It was all black male prisoners.
And this takes different forms, because even when we go back mm-hmm. to like the Chinese, and when the Chinese were building the railroad,
mm-hmm.
they noticed that they could connect the opium problem to the Chinese, you know, and right. that was really America's first drug law, was when they tried to
yeah.
pass this opium ban. And it wasn't like if you were a wealthy woman in Boston who used opium for kicks or whatever, you probably wouldn't have been arrested. But if it was like the Chinese male, because before the current immigration things, it was all about the Chinese. The first specific
yeah.
law to ban immigrants was the Chinese. After they built yeah. our railroad system, he was like, well, they built the railroads, and then it was like, well, now they're mining for gold, and we don't want them to get it, so we're going to pass this
yeah.
immigration law and get rid of them, and we can loosely connect that to opium fears.
Uh-huh.
So they've always kind of connected race. There's xenophobia, and there's also race of immigrants that are already here, and be able to connect that into drug fears and this drug pandemic. And I think it was just as true when they went after the Chinese and their opium in the over 100 years ago, and it was just as true when Nixon declared the war on drugs and
uh-huh.
kind of started cracking down on all this stuff. And Nixon and Reagan and George H.C. Jeb Bush could talk about Florida's program, but his brother George W. Bush and father George H.W. Bush, they were horrible when it came to the drug
yeah.
war. And Reagan in particular, I mean, well, there's all these, you can watch the movie Kill the Messenger with Jeremy Renner, where he
yeah.
basically a real life story of a journalist who exposed that at the same time the Reagan administration was talking about fighting drugs and all this, they were helping cocaine traffickers get drugs into America to give crack to the inner cities, because they wanted the cocaine traffickers to get money to the people fighting the communists.
Right.
So at the same time Reagan passed this crazy law where if you had crack, it was like 100 years for every 1 year you'd have for cocaine. So at the same time where he created the crack problem, and then once there was a crack problem in the inner cities, he passed a law that basically would give cops free rein to lock up black males seemingly forever.
Right.
But he could mm-hmm. get 100 years for a pound of crack. I mean, it was crazy. And overnight, when they started passing these drug laws, you saw our prisons 50 years ago, it was about 80% violent offenders, 20% nonviolent offenders, and now those numbers have flopped. They're exactly
uh-huh.
the inverse, and about 80 to 90%, somewhere in there, of our prisons are nonviolent offenders, and a huge chunk of that is drug crimes. So people who talk about our prison population is too big, I don't know that you're going to be able to fix that without some type of way to get around these drug laws that are so draconian and passed a long time ago. And I wish there were more people in the Republican Party talking about it like Rand was, and I wish there were more people in the Democrat Party talking about it.
Like, that's an issue that really a lot of Democrats should, basically, they should work with Rand, and they should take up that issue, and because, like you said, it's the one issue that, for one, he was passionate about it, but two, it was a legitimate issue that no one is willing to address, especially even the Democratic Party, who's supposed to be the party that stands up for minority rights and all of this. But it's something that even them, Bernie Sanders will talk about it some, but not really. Hillary?
Bernie started talking about it after Black Lives Matter disrupted two or three of his
right.
rallies.
Yeah.
And I mean, for that, he talked solely about money, socialism, and...
Which he still ties it back to...
Like economic issues. And then when they started, like, basically harassing him at his rallies or whatever and kind of, like, bothering him, he started to say, oh, I'm the candidate to get rid of the prison industrial complex and pass the drug laws. And, I mean, I have no doubt that in his heart he supports all that stuff, but that wasn't a primary focus, not really, until they started boycotting him. I mean, we can look at the candidates and how they stand on this. I think Hillary and Bernie both are pretty good. I mean, they're not, like, it's not a top focus for either one of them. But I think if they were elected, I think they would continue what Obama's been doing, which is kind of like, if the state wants to legalize it, you know, like,
yeah.
he's kind of like, Obama's kind of schizophrenic on this issue, because on the one hand, he's locked up a lot of drug offenders. I mean, his Justice Department has really cracked down on drugs in the states where it's not legal. But in the states like Colorado and Washington and Alaska and all the states where it is legal, they've allowed them to do this. And I'm a little afraid that a Republican, I mean, they've made promises they wouldn't allow it. And so I think Hillary and Bernie, they would maybe allow each state to keep legalizing it. Because, I mean, right now there's four. I think there's a few states, like I believe California is going to put it on their ballot in November. There's a few states that are going to vote on it in November where they know young people are going to be out in full force, and they know, like, minorities and young people and these groups are going to be out voting for president. The states that usually don't pass it are ones who put it in the midterm. So, I mean, we have four right now. It could be as much as 10 by the end of the year. So I think you're seeing this change state. But let's not forget, there's still a bunch of states like Alabama that don't even have medical marijuana. I think people thought medical marijuana was nationwide. It's not. There's a lot of red states like Alabama that don't have
it. Yeah, a lot of the South.
So people who had, like, back pain, or, you know, Alabama is also a right-to-work state where people are likely to get injured on the job, and they're like, oh, we'll give you these Oxycontins. And when Alabama has an enormous painkiller problem. It's pretty much crystal meth and painkillers. And if you got injured at the job, they would give you Oxycontin, but they wouldn't give you medical marijuana. You kind of, the solutions are not, they kind of don't match up with the problems. But I think Obama and Bernie, they would allow this to kind of continue state by state. But we have to worry about the Republicans, because let's kind of get into what each candidate has said about this. Ted Cruz, again, this is the classic conservative. This is a guy who feels sorry for himself, but anybody else who's in a similar position, he has no sympathy for them. And he can talk about his sister, but his policies are draconian about people who get the same thing. His sister, under his policies, would have been in prison. She wouldn't have been able to overdose. She would have been in jail for 30 years.
Yeah.
Maybe he thinks that's better. So he's pretty bad on it. Do you know Trump's position? I don't know if he's ever said if he would keep the legalization for states, or if he, I don't know if he's ever commented on it.
I haven't heard him comment on it.
No, I hadn't either. Which usually, if he doesn't say anything about it, it's probably one of his more liberal positions.
Yeah.
Maybe we can infer that he wouldn't do anything about it. It seems like the worst of the lot may be Chris Christie, though, because I think he has actively said he would stick his Justice Department on states that have legalized it. I think he's kind of campaigning on this anti-legalization platform, which it may be popular in the Republican primaries, but nationwide, I don't think people would. It seems like people are ready to move on. It doesn't seem like they're for, you know, they're for marijuana prohibition anymore. They're ready to move past it.
And ironically, I decided I would cruise over to Donald Trump's website, which I'm surprised my computer didn't crash. It's not even this.
Search engine says, are you sure? Question mark.
Yeah. He literally doesn't even have it as a position. Like, he doesn't even have a position on it on his website. As a matter of fact, the only positions he has on here is trade reform, the VA, tax reform, Second Amendment, and immigration. That's it.
Yeah. But, like, if people cared as much about, like, the minority that we have in the prisons as we do about soldiers and veterans and stuff like that, there might be real movement on this issue. One of Bernie's few legislative accomplishments, he keeps talking about it, is last year he tried to pass a bill for veterans if he got some Republican votes. Of course, he doesn't mention that it still didn't pass. He didn't mention that it didn't get the 60 votes it needed, but I thought Democrats, if they won't even work together to pass a huge spending bill for veterans, what are they going to work on? But there are a lot of Republicans who like this stuff. Not just Ron and Rand Paul, but I mean, there's a growing consensus among conservatives to get some kind of drug reform going. Right now, if our prison population, if it continued to grow as it has been, it would bankrupt us. People talk about spending and the deficit and all these different things that we need to cut, Social Security and Medicare. And one of the fastest growing sectors of the economy is prisons and the debt from that.
Yeah.
Sheer amount of money to keep these people locked up.
Then again, that's why some states are starting to go to private prison, and they're actually making money. So now we can lock people up, put them in private prisons, and we can actually make money. So we have a monetary incentive to lock people up and give them prison sentences.
Probably have a whole separate podcast about just the ways our justice system's been privatized into private bail, private prisons, people getting locked up over municipal fines and fees. But right now, in just the drug war, I mean, New Hampshire, they vote, they're the next primary, they have a huge heroin problem. Their next door neighbor, Vermont, they have a huge heroin problem. And I haven't heard, you know, the New England politicians, John Kasich, he's trying to be, I mean, I know he's Ohio, but he's trying to be Mr. New Hampshire. Bernie Sanders, obviously, Vermont. I haven't heard a lot of real solutions about this problem come out of them. It seems like an easy fix. Make marijuana legal and loosen up some of the penalties for crack cocaine and crystal meth, take nonviolent drug offenders and start putting them in rehab programs that are prisons, and people who are in prison for nonviolent offenses, like, try to do any type of rehabilitation, which right now they don't do, and get away from this private prison model of, like, the more people who go to jail, the more customers you've got. You know, so the fact, I mean, I know America is the most capitalist country on earth, but the fact that prisons have become a big business is kind of disgusting, really.
Yeah, it is.
You know, I mean, I see the stats. sheer millions of black men who have been in prison in some time in their lifetime, something like one out of three almost, or that's bad. I mean, it's terrible. America has the highest incarceration rate in the world. I mean, more than China. We don't have a third of their population.
Kind of like what we've talked about, this is really nothing new, that America is trying to lock up minorities for whatever reason it may be. I mean, it's a form of racism that we're never going to get rid of. Well, I mean, I say never, but
yeah,
it's been in our history since after the Civil War, so.
Yeah, pretty much. So on that hopeful note, so Michael, we'll just quickly end on this. You have any predictions for New Hampshire? I mean, it looks pretty Trump and Bernie Sanders. I don't see how they could lose.
Yeah, I don't either.
If Trump loses New Hampshire, then he's in serious trouble. Either one of them lose, they're in trouble. But especially Bernie, because Bernie, after New Hampshire, he has South Carolina and what's called the SEC primary, where you got the 10 on Super Tuesday. A lot of them are Southern, except for Vermont. I don't know that Bernie will win a single state on Super Tuesday in March the
1st. I don't think so.
So his race only gets hard. If he loses New Hampshire, it's pretty much over for him, because his race is only going to get harder. If Trump loses, it sucks, but he is still pretty far ahead in South Carolina and all the states on March 1st, including Alabama, which maybe connects back into our thing. And what's the most popular position of Trump in Alabama? Immigration. And this is the state that's got the strictest immigration bill in the country. Under that immigration bill, you can't even give an illegal immigrant a car ride. Knowingly.
Yeah, basically.
So a knowing illegal immigrant a car ride. So it's no surprise that a state that had such draconian immigration laws that it basically pushed a lot of immigrants out of the state to other areas, they still think they've got an immigration problem. And I think this is that thing where it's like states that have increasingly smaller numbers of immigration, they're worried about it. Iowa was worried about immigration, and they have 10 Mexicans in their whole state. So it's like immigration and drugs and race and gang fears and black fears, these are all kind of connected into something people shouldn't worry about. We'll have plenty of time to get into that next. So anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. Michael, what's your web address?
BlueInAlabama.wordpress.com.
And of course, you can find me at Alabama Liberal. Join us for episode 8, where we'll talk about who won the New Hampshire primaries, what to expect for South Carolina, and maybe a little bit more about the states coming up. Okay, thanks.